Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host, our favorite co-host.
Good to have you back, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, ready to go and get us out of another war.
That's another day, another war.
I always thought, I should go to Congress and work hard to try to prevent some of this militarism and stop a war. And I keep thinking, today you have to stop this war. But you know what? I may have had some type of influence for the position of non-intervention, but I didn't stop much war, So, but we still are at it, and there was a vote yesterday in the Senate, and it's a Republican Senate, and it passed 54-46, like that.
Yeah.
And that is to get out of the war in Yemen. We're bosom buddies of the Saudis, and we voted to get out. So you wonder, well, why would who did the voting? It's a Republican Senate.
Yeah.
So did all the Republicans carry this through and get some Democrats to vote? No, exactly the opposite. The Democrats did it with a handful. Mike Lee was a leader on this, and of course Rand participated in it. There was six or seven Republicans, and they were able to get it passed through. But it was obviously something they did because of the rules of the Senate. Because McConnell is not going to bring that up if he it didn't have to, but it was under the War Powers Resolution, and they have to vote on a resolution like this. So this is a good vote. I've learned to be a bit cynical because sometimes Congress votes certain things, and sometimes they just get quiet about it and do it anyway. Have an intermediary. So that's not nice to always be suspicious of our government. But I think they've deserved it and they've earned that disrespect because they're always doing things that they won't tell us. But anyway, I think it's good because this, you could argue, is starting to reflect the people. And the people, because they're not going to vote that way if it was, overwhelming in their district, to vote the other way. So I think this is good. The War Powers Resolution we've talked about before is not the greatest thing in the world because we shouldn't even had it. But there are parts of it that they at least allow people to react. And when they do, we made efforts to use it when I was in office. And yet it gives you a chance to speak out against the war. So this is good. And when you look at the tragedy of Yemen, over 100,000 killed, and there's this starvation going on. And for us to be participants of this and do whatever the Saudis run us to do, to me it's sad. So I think that vote was a good vote yesterday.
Yeah, it's important. The Senate came out in the last Congress that ended in January, and they voted in on a similar resolution. This is provided for by the War Powers Act of 73. And as you've always pointed out, it's pretty unconstitutional. However, you've used it as a tool, and this is what the Senate's done. Well, the House, of course, under Ryan last Congress, he refused. He did something I think that's illegal. He used a Rules Committee, remember, to make it so that it couldn't go to the floor, even though it's guaranteed under the resolution to go to the floor. So under Pelosi, of course, I'm sure politics played a role, but she went ahead and let it get brought to the floor. But then they messed it up. They passed a messed up version because they entered non-germane language into the bill about supporting Israel and opposing the BDS movement. And so the Senate said, hey, we're not going to take that bill up. It's not germane. You can't add this stuff in. So it's this big mess that's happening now. But finally, the Senate has passed a pretty clean bill, and the House is supposedly expected to pick up its similar bill.
It would be really disappointing if there's enough pressure for them not to bring it up under these circumstances. So my guess is that the public pressure will be so strong they will have to bring it up. And this one, is it vulnerable to the veto? It could be, and that could well happen because Trump feels pretty strongly about this. So
yeah, the veto is an important thing, and it's interesting because he said he'll veto it. But as you say before the show, he doesn't always do what he says he's going to do. So you never know. But, Jason Ditz had a good point on antiwar.com. He had a little piece today on that. And he pointed out that a veto is actually pretty problematic if you think about it, because the Constitution gives Congress the power over war making. explicitly. War and peace are the purview of the Congress. Well, in these two joint resolutions, if the House passes one, that is explicitly an act by Congress, an act on the issue of war and peace. So the president actually having the power to veto that would be, I think, by definition, unconstitutional, if you think about it. It's a strange thing. They're trying to fix a problem by passing the war powers, but in a way they've created a greater problem.
Yes, this to me is an utter tragedy, what's happened here. And it's been going on for a long time, because I remember back probably more than 10 years or so that when the coal incident came up, I was speaking about why are we in here and getting involved? And of course, I was attacked rather quickly by the media because I was anti-Semitic, you know, because I didn't want them to get so involved. And here we are, much further along, much more violence, and it just goes on and on. And you know, starvation is actually being used as a tool. I mean, it's done on purpose. And unfortunately, the evidence looks pretty much that we participate in that too. They just stop, you know, the imports from coming in and say, I think it was Pompeo that was saying, he sort of mocked the whole thing, made fun of it, you know, that we're going to get these people to toe the line supported the boycott on food.
Yeah, sanctions, sanctions, sanctions too.
Right.
Is the name of the game. It just shows the situational ethics of U.S. foreign policy establishment, and also of the hypocrisy, I guess you could say, because here you have in Venezuela people not doing that awfully well, perhaps, but the U.S., the neocons, the administration are screaming about starvation, mass starvation. It's the worst thing in the world. And here you have another thing where you actually do see the evidence of the starvation. You see the children, you see the emaciated people, the tragedies, the numbers are there, and the U.S. is not only not condemning it, but actually participating in it, you know. So you're right, it is a disgusting tragedy and really a black mark on the United States.
You know, the military-industrial complex is an important part because they buy so many weapons. But in the administration, especially for the president, you know, Iran is an important subject too, because they blatantly say, and I'm sure the Iranians are sympathetic, but they're probably less involved than we are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
In this squabble down there. So that's probably more of an excuse than the other thing, and that is the association of our government with the Saudis. Because if there was ever a time, you know, just for public relations, some of these people who are wishy-washy on anti-war, but will come around with this, they see this Khashoggi thing as a big deal, and we said nothing. Of course, that wouldn't have been so bad when there's an assassination or something around the world if we weren't so involved and if it didn't have so much, impact. Worrying about it, that wouldn't be our business. But under these circumstances, where that is used, you know, to direct our foreign policy and or defend, the big argument now, you know, part of it is, did the Saudis really kill Khashoggi?
Yeah.
And obviously, I think the evidence so far looks like, yes, they probably did.
Looks pretty bad. And, you know, that is the Yemen war. It's a proxy war. It's the U.S., the Saudis, and the Israelis fighting a proxy war against Iran, claiming that Iran is so tightly connected to the Houthis, when in fact, as you say, that's not really true. Well, the Houthis find themselves without a friend in the world. The Iranians are slightly sympathetic. They have I guess their religion, their form of Islam is slightly more attuned to the Houthis' form of Islam. And so there's something there, but, you know, there's nobody coming to their aid. The Iranians are not involved directly, but, of course, the U.S. is trying to play up the fact that it is. We've mentioned several times on the show that AP investigation that found that our actions in Yemen were helping al-Qaeda. So
The one thing that I thought about when this came up, I thought, well, what would I do if I was there? Of course, I'd vote for it, but I would want to amend it and include every other war that I didn't like. You know, how many other places have we gone without declaration? We have about two or three going on endlessly. But the best Rand could do on this, which at least makes that point, he offered an amendment and it passed that said there's nothing in this bill to construe that we support interventions, you know, the undeclared wars elsewhere. And that was I think, a good amendment. But then you always have to worry, well, do they really care, you know? But anyway, that was a good point.
Definitely. And you know, this whole issue of the Yemen war and the Congress and war powers really, it's again brings up the such a critical important issue of separation of powers. You know, and the way our constitution, our system of government was constructed. The chief of staff, unfortunately, the acting chief of staff of the president, wasn't too happy about the Senate vote. He said it's a violation of constitutional powers. They're trying to override the president's determination as commander in chief. It's pretty tough stuff.
That was very disturbing because I have personal relations in the past, you know, with the chief of staff, and I had always had high hopes.
Yeah.
But because he wanted to identify with what we were doing, and I knew him before he was in the Congress.
Yeah.
But now it's can't do anything to undermine the executive branch and the power to wage war. So that to me was disturbing.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. And Ted Carpenter at the National Interest wrote an interesting piece about it was about this, but it was about in a broader way the misplaced assertiveness of Congress. And that's an interesting point. He points out that, you know, when it comes to areas where we talk about this a lot, where they really don't have the authority to do it, they're gung-ho, they want to do something. And then the areas that are a little bit more heavy lifting, a little bit more politically damaging potentially, they don't want to have anything to do with it. He points out how the House passed the NATO Support Act prohibiting the president from using any funds to get out of NATO. I guess they're doing one to prohibit him from getting out of the INF treaty. And he has a good quote, I think, from Ted. He says, as Congress evades its responsibilities in the most vital areas, war and peace, it is escalating its meddling and attempted micromanagement of other elements of foreign policy. And when I read that, I thought of something that I knew what you would say, because for them it's about politics, not about principles.
Oh, I think that happens now and then. What a shame. But they all take the same oath, which is interesting. And the other thing that amazed me, there was never any remorse about saying one thing and doing another, because in their minds they could convert what they are saying into what they believe, and it's mainly because they've been taught the difference that a smart person, after you get educated, you know that you have to adapt to the times that you're in. Well, that's why they have the amendments. But no, they do that. So they rationalize. It doesn't bother them a bit. I don't think they ever lose any sleep over the fact that we've sent so many people off to war that were undeclared.
Yeah, and I think, you know, hopefully, you know, we have a little bit of optimism. We've had it occasionally about the Yemen war. It is really a big black stain on our government. Hopefully this is the beginning of the end of our participation in the Yemen war. So,
Well, I understand they're having another vote today in the Senate, and that has to do with canceling out that executive order that there's an emergency and we have to build a wall. And there's two issues there. One, is the wall a legitimate thing to do, and could it be helpful? And you could argue it's a national security issue. It's more so if it's a wall around our border than if it's a wall in Syria,
yeah,
or Yemen or someplace. And we build a lot of walls elsewhere. So that would be one issue. But the other issue is the process, once again.
Yeah.
And can the president do this? Should he have the authority from the Congress? And, of course, I come down on the side that say that the Congress should. But once again, you mentioned the politics of it. If you ever wanted to look at the politics, what if you went and compared the votes who supported the wall about 4 or 5 years ago when Obama was in,
yeah,
and now look at him, all of a sudden, oh no, wall was great before, but now the wall is a lousy idea.
This is a terrible wall.
And those same people don't have much concern about the details of the Constitution.
Yeah, and you know, there's been a lot of piling on Senator Paul for opposing the way the president did it. And I haven't seen everything he's written about it, but I don't even know he necessarily is opposing in principle. He doesn't like the way it's happening, though. You know, people don't see that it's important.
Right.
But I would just close. I haven't done this in a couple of days, but I would close by reminding you that we are having a conference in May on the drug war, winning the war on the war on drugs. It's going to be a pretty good news conference. We've got some good speakers. Dr. Paul is going to be there. Great chance to visit with him in our home element, almost. ronpaulinstitute.org/conference. All the information, buy tickets. It'll be a half-day affair, not too much heavy lifting. Meet a lot of good people, have a good time, and hopefully learn something. So we look forward to seeing you there.
Very good, and I hope to see all of you out there, at least a bunch of you there. You know, we talk a lot about war and the wars that we shouldn't be fighting, which are almost all of them. But this is a war which you would say, well, this is a domestic war. This is much more legitimate, and we have to fight it. But it's more than that, because all of a sudden it enters into the border disputes, and the chaos on our borders has a lot to do with drugs, too. So it's not strictly, you know, a domestic issue. Matter of fact, it becomes an international issue because we accept this notion that the only problem with people who use drugs are not there are not enough laws to handle people's habits and things, which I don't believe in. So it's a situation that we have today that is messy, mainly because people don't think too much about non-intervention in the personal lifestyles of people, whether they take drugs or not, or the personal lifestyles or what we do internationally too. We believe that we shouldn't be involved in internal affairs of the other. And the hardest thing for people to accept there is you don't care about it when a leader like Assad is starving his child babies and all this and build up the propaganda. So they build up the propaganda. If you don't join in, become a warmonger, then you support that, which is not true. If you don't get involved when there's a problem around the world, that means that it isn't wise to do it. It isn't constitutional to do it. We probably can't afford to do it. It will make things much worse. So there's a lot of other reasons for not being involved. And what are the reasons for just staying at home? Staying home with our military doesn't mean staying at home with what we do and what we can share and share in culture and trade and these sorts of things. But just to mind our own business, if we want to move toward a more peaceful world, this is what we have to accept, that we can't use government force to have our way and tell other people how to live and saying, well, we are an exceptional nation. We are the greatest. If they just followed us, we're all going to be okay. Well, we should always look to ourselves. And there will be many imperfections around the world. But if the imperfections that we have more responsibility to correct it. And I'm convinced that if we would do a lot better job doing that, I think we could have more influence around the world. I think you have more victories in peace than you do in war. And the example I always use for that is Vietnam. Just think of how many people died when the French were there and the Americans there, and how many were killed, you know, over this. And yet we really just lost that war. We had to walk out of there in total defeat, and now we get along with them much better. We trade with them. We go there. We had a peace conference there just recently. So, yes, there's much more to be said about approaching so many of our problems with peace, with the idea if you have certain rules, and the rule that we should follow is non-interventionism, whether it's in foreign policy, whether it's interfering with non-violent personal liberties and personal habits. And I think under those circumstances, we would all get along much better, and that should be our goal, peace and prosperity for as many people as possible. But first off, you have to think about the importance of the individual rights, and also how that is incorporated into the principle of non-interventionism. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.